Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So what holiday starts this Friday for us?
Passover.
So my in-laws have been talking with the wine tyrant, trying to make sure that you feel comfortable in their home.
Right.
So Chan is going out to purchase matzah, but he doesn't quite know how to set up a seder or what to serve it with.
Right.
Do so they he's have gonna, that in South Carolina?
He's going to serve matzah.
With mayonnaise?
Essentially, as an hors d'oeuvre with cheddar cheese.
Oh, that's just how lovely.
So great.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
And indeed he did.
You
he
should have heard the four questions.
Yeah, he didn't know the four, but he didn't know any of the questions.
Well, you know.
One question. Why did you put cheese on the matzo? We're live at Chatter. Everybody's here for breakfast. Yay. We're very happy. We open for breakfast when the show is on at 7 o'clock. You go to the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in Friendship Heights. Gary Braun is here. Chris Saliza is here. I have a fabulous shirt that was made for us.
So that shirt is brilliant.
It's so great.
That is good.
Edith Saliza's shirt. Yeah. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is here running the board, doing the news. There's a lot of things to talk about, and I'm not going to do it today because we're guest loaded. For the rest of the week, when the only thing we have to talk about is the NHL or the NBA playoffs, believe me, I'm not going to talk about them. And I'll talk about the adventures that we had. But I want to thank three people right away for really helping me and with all of my travel concerns. Kent Powell of American Airlines and Alex Podlegar of Pinehurst and Nick Genovich from Amtrak. And all of those people were very important. We got a great trip treat in Spring Island, Michael and I. We played with John Engelbrecht and Jim Hughes, which was very, very nice. And I'm going to talk just briefly about the nature of my trip to say this. I'm never doing this again. I'm never doing it again.
I'll tell that to Chan and Moni.
No, Chan and Moni were great. No, I'll tell you why I'm never doing it again. Chan and Moni were actually great. I took too much time off. It was too long. It was just too long. I haven't worked in like 9 or 10 days. I missed doing this. I missed PTI. I don't have that much longer to do these things. I'm not, you know, PTI, I'm going to get canned pretty soon. And I really like my jobs. When I was down in Pinehurst, and one of the days I was playing, I always have the same caddy when we play number two. His name is Doak, and I like Doak very much.
Is that by request or just so happens?
Well, he likes me, and I like him, and okay. We chat. We you know, I shoot 120, and we chat. But he said at one, you know, he just said, "You've got the greatest jobs in the world," and I do, and I miss them. It was too much time off. You know, I'm braked out. Too much break. I don't know if anybody else feels this way. There are weeks when I need vacation, and I understand that. But this spread over too. Do you ever feel this way?
I felt this way this time in particular because I took the week off. The week prior to your week
right,
off. So it's been a couple of weeks since I have been in here. But I'm not going to say I'm like you. Thank goodness that's not the case. But I need stuff to do. I mean, there's stuff. Yeah. I can always find something to do around the house. But I need to get out of my house.
I
mostly just lay face down. I mean, it works out well for me.
No.
I, like Gary, took the week before your
break.
Week off.
Yeah.
And then I was in New York the week before that, much to the joy of many Tony Kornheiser Show listeners.
But you were working on either sides of those
weeks.
Yes,
I worked on both sides of those weeks. But
CNN.
Yeah, I mean, I like to work. I used to like
to take 2 weeks off a couple of times in the summer, two in a row, and go out to the beach. And that's okay, but I like doing this.
Yeah.
So I felt at some point,
that's good.
Enough.
That's good.
Let's go back to work.
It's good you like your jobs.
Michael, you had time off. Did you think it was too much? You're young. You probably didn't think it was too much. And you had the baby boy boots.
So I'm still at that phase where every day is pretty much the exact same because of Walker's schedule. But yes, it felt, particularly around this time of year with the start of baseball and with the Masters, it felt like we should have been on air.
Yeah. So we didn't get the chance to talk about the national championship game.
Right.
Or, you know, there's a bunch
of the brackets.
A bunch of things happened. So let me read the brackets, the people that did well.
Come on.
The winner,
fingers crossed.
The winner of the sort of people who are bigs. The bigs
bracket.
Did Nigel win again?
Pat Forty.
No,
Pat 1,290 points.
Wow. Yes. Terrifyingly
David Aldridge
legitimate.
Came in second. Howard Fineman came in third. Gene McManus fourth. Michael Wilbon fifth.
The top.
Baby Boy Bootsy had a chance to win at Kansas one.
Had the chance.
Baby Boy Bootsy would have won as we go all the way down the line. Phil's mom was last.
Oh, no.
Chuck Todd was right above
Sad.
Phil's mom.
Well, he had Miami going deep.
Wait, is that Sleepy-Eyed Chuck Todd?
Sleepy-Eyed Chuck Todd. Michael Kornheiser right above him, tied with Barry Zwarluga. Spike Braun didn't have as good a year this year, was above them.
Although Ike and Sidney won Garcia's pool.
Right. Chris Saliza was right above them.
Yeah.
And Leon Harris Gary's and I were tied right above him in the lower third. Wow. We were all in the lower third.
It's dreadful.
In terms of, now the winner, Pat Forty, who does this professionally, had 1,290 points. The winner of the bracket
overall
for everybody, all the littles. Do we have prizes for them? Don't we have something?
Yes, we have something.
There's some pocket limb. Total consciousness on the deathbed.
Yeah. No, we need to. We have so much stuff around here,
which is nice.
Rocky's piercing bark, 1,450 points.
Wow!
Right under that, Cine 28-2, 1,440. Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin, which is funny. 1,430, tied with Full Service Fishman and Sands Always Sits, 1,430. But Forty got 1,290.
Did Forty have Loyola in the Final Four?
I don't know.
Negative.
No.
Okay.
No, but he had Villanova winning.
But I think
Williams
he had Michigan.
Had Villanova winning, too.
When I tweeted Pat, he said, one of the great honors of my life, after all these years of picking brackets with Tony, I'm finally a winner. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah.
I think I read 20.3% of the 17-plus million brackets submitted on ESPN, 20.3% had Villanova winning. 1 in 5.
You know, just, I know we're not going to dwell too much on this, but
it wasn't much of a game.
In a year, in a year
it
where
started
the,
way too late.
No
in the
question
year.
About
in a year
the
where the storyline was no dominant team. There was quite clearly a very
in the
dominant
tournament,
team.
Villanova won just every game everyone. By a minimum of 12 points. This is an interesting factoid. All right, about 3 weeks before the beginning of the tournament on the PTI show, we had Bill Self on. And I asked this question. It was not written down, but I was curious about it.
Well, came up with it on your own.
Came up with it on my own.
Very nice.
And I said, is there any team you've seen where you go, wow, that team's really good? Because you're asking this about a guy who's in the wow category himself. Any one game. Wow, that team's really good. And he said, yeah, Villanova at Butler, at Xavier. Villanova at Xavier. You went, whoa. And that's what you got in the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's
Villanova
what they did.
Xavier. Now, not against Texas Tech, where they could. If Texas Tech was any good, Villanova would have been out. But everybody else.
So I know this isn't equivalent, but Villanova was up 35 at. Nigel will correct me if I'm wrong, but at least 35, maybe 40 at Georgetown because they made every shot. Then the Xavier game, and then the Final Four, the Kansas game. They didn't even play their best
Self
in the
got
championship.
To look at it firsthand.
They didn't even play their best. They played their best in that semifinal game. You're unstoppable.
Well,
the impressive
thing to me about them was in that final game when about halfway through the first half, I think it's 21-16 Michigan, Villanova has made nothing.
No shots.
And yet, they're within five. And the thing about Villanova is you know they're not going away.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't going to blow them out.
They go. So, let me get to the Masters because we're going to have Steve Sands on later. We're going to spend most of the day talking about the Masters. These are my opinions. They don't reflect everybody here. Patrick Reed won it. Nobody lost it. Patrick Reed won it, even though he shot 71. He held tight after the first two holes. Well, I'll ask Sands about this. He bogeyed one, and he got a par on the par five, which a lot of people birdie. And he was shaky at that point. But he birdied three. And at that point, and Michael, he just a 90-mile-an-hour putt that if it misses, it goes 12 feet past.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
But he birdies three, and then
he's
able to say to himself, okay, I don't stink. Okay, I'll be all right. And he was all right. And I felt the single most critical, some people will say it's the birdie on 12 by Reed or the birdie on 14 by Reed or the comeback putt, the fourth putt on 17 to par that hole. You can look at Patrick Reed and you can look at his round and you can say these are the most critical moments in the Masters. And I thought it was Rory McIlroy missing the eagle on two because he ties him right there. This is a 7-foot putt. And Rory McIlroy ties him right there with that eagle. And then it is different. It is discernibly different. And it didn't happen. And Rory McIlroy missed putts all day, burned edges all day, mostly the right edge, Michael?
Yes, he had the exact same miss with the putter that he had with his drive on the opening hole. I would go back to
number one. Oh, he went so far right.
Number one tee. And it looked like his miss is a big sweeping hook to the left, and that was in his head, and it affected him on the greens. And you come back to two. Yes, he missed the eagle putt, but he still won the first two holes. He still picked up another shot, and at that point in the round, you're just trying to pick up one shot at a time.
That's right.
To me, it's that wedge into three. He knows where that pin is. He knows you have to miss long, which is where Reed missed it, where you have a pretty good chance in an up and down. He had zero chance at saving par on three, and even with the birdie on the difficult par three fourth, he was out of it early, and he was a non-factor.
He was
on
an
the second
absolute
nine.
Non-factor.
Five fives and a six on his card yesterday.
So Rory was never in position to put any pressure on Reed. The pressure came, if there was pressure, from Jordan Spieth, who had a 64 on Sunday, which wins every tournament ever. I mean, it does. 64 on Sunday wins. He had 1 point. I think he rolled one in on 16, the last par three, and he looked at his own caddy and said, "Are you kidding me?" I mean, because it was like 45 feet.
After another big putt on 12.
Yeah, and Ricky Fowler put a slight pressure on him. But Reed won this and was rather defiant afterwards and talked about how nobody believed he could win it. And I will say this, and then we'll open this up for anybody who wants to talk about the Masters. I was asked yesterday by a couple of different people, two or three different people, who I thought would win. And I said 99 times out of 100, I would tell you I thought Rory McIlroy would win. This is at 8 o'clock in the morning. I said, but not against this guy. This guy beat him head-to-head in the Ryder Cup. And this guy, he looks fat, and he looks paunchy, and he's very arrogant, and nobody likes him. But he's tough. He's tough. I thought if it came down to the two of them, and it didn't really. If it came down to two of them, I thought Reed would win, and Reed won. Your thoughts watching it?
Well, I happen to have agreed with you when asked by Spike yesterday morning who I thought would win. I thought Reed would hang on. Just the whole Captain America hype I was buying
He's
into.
Good.
The one thing you mentioned, the pressure he did or
he
didn't receive.
He wore a
receive,
bad shirt.
And
I love that.
The
hot
fuchsia.
Pink.
That was a bad shirt.
That's yeah. When
hot see, pink is for closers.
But he didn't wear his choker anymore. He used to wear the choker necklace.
Yeah. He didn't do it.
I was so disappointed when Spieth's drive on 18 clipped the tree.
Yeah,
I wanted. I mean, I knew a birdie was very unlikely there, but I wanted to see a little bit more pressure be applied. I wanted to see a little bit more drama. But I agree with you. He went out there and he won it, and 71 was good enough to win it based on what he had done the prior 3 days, which was three rounds in the 60s.
I watched 14 on about with the last groups. We were at a soccer game in Ellicott City, beautiful
nice.
This time of year.
Well, everybody wants to be
scenic,
there.
Just down 29 for about an hour. I was rooting for, I don't know anything about anyone other than the top guys, which I guess he's included in, but I mean
he's
like
top,
Rory.
He's around 10, 12, somewhere.
Rory, right. Ricky Fowler. Like, yeah. I know something about those guys. So I was kind of rooting for Patrick Reed solely because he's kind of like chubby.
Yeah.
And he had a hot pink shirt on.
Yeah.
And
those are good reasons.
Yep. And then on like 17, right as I was rooting for him, Nance, I think, said, and in these moments, he thinks of a quote from the Imagine Dragons. And I was like, wait, what? The Imagine Dragons, the Beatles, okay, but the Imagine Dragons, that's his band of choice. So then I started rooting against him, but by then it was too late. I read a bunch about him afterward, and I know, obviously, you guys know
background.
This, but, oh my gosh, I mean, he doesn't, his parents were removed from the U.S. Open
yes.
at his request several years. I mean, he's totally estranged from his parents and his sister.
His mother sends cryptic social media messages hoping that Patrick Reed comes back to the family.
I mean, it's do we know why?
So there have been allegations of abuse that Patrick Reed's wife has made against the family. I think a lot of it could just be superstar athlete that the parents put so much pressure that he's trying to separate from it now. But that piggybacks off of the controversy over his college days, where he only lasted for a semester at University of Georgia before being kicked off the team and eventually transferring to the smaller Augusta State, which you would think he's now the adopted hometown boy. They want to throw their arms around him like Larry Mize.
No.
But he was suspended from that team as well.
No.
And
they begrudgingly
had to accept him because they used him to win a couple national championships.
I mean, it's a total... I look at that guy and I'm like, he seems like a pretty good guy. You know, and then you read the backstory and you're like, this guy, because I read about the UGA stuff, he's kicked off the team. All his quotes are like, and they were rooting for Rory and they hate me. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's totally interesting.
Yeah.
What did you think of the tournament? What did you think of Reed?
he won the tournament. He had a great weekend. If you look at the two eagles he had on Saturday, he pretty much had it locked up. You give him a three-shot cushion going into the final round, he's going to manage that. That and you saw safe. Him do that on the second nine. He misses it in the right places. I was so surprised to see Rory unsettled just by being around him, and I don't think it's not the same as the Ryder Cup. It's not the me versus him. It looked like Rory just physically did not want to be near him. If you looked at a couple of the putts, it wasn't even like he was reading them. He was swatting them and trying to get out of the way quickly.
I think of Rory McIlroy as a great, great player, and he came up small. He really did, and you can't be too critical because he's got three or four.
He has four majors.
He's got four majors already. The other thing that I would mention, I'll ask Sands about this. Tiger and Phil, they're done. Now, I don't mean that in a very critical way. I mean, if you looked at the leaderboard late, these guys are in their 20s or maybe early 30s. Fowler maybe early 30s. There was Fowler and Rahm and Spieth and McIlroy and Reed.
Yep.
And this is their, you know, Tiger may win one and Phil may win one. I'm not saying that they won't, but this was, in my mind, the passing of a torch.
Yeah.
In my mind.
And they were
I agree with that. But if you look at this tournament, you look at what Jordan Spieth did yesterday, he was able to shoot that number because he knows those pins and he knows how the ball is going to react. So you will have Tiger or Phil having those Fred couple runs where they may not get another victory there. They may not have that Jack Nicklaus 1986 moment, but they are going to be competitive on that golf course.
They can do
and
it.
If you look at what Tiger did,
Phil was way minus yesterday and Tiger was minus four.
Almost to even par, which was his goal, by playing the par fives essentially even for the opening two rounds.
And by the way, you mentioned Rahm just as someone who was rooting for drama. That was another disappointment when he rinsed it on 15.
And also, by the way, he's a club thrower, it appears.
Yeah. Oh, man.
What are you doing?
You know what's so funny about that is I was watching, and what's the par three right toward the end, Michael? Is it
16?
He hits it. And I think his reaction, I assume he has sculled it into the crowd.
Right.
It bounces and rolls 50 feet away.
I thought he was going to be above the ridge with that reaction.
Yeah. I seriously thought he had sculled it into the crowd.
He's likely getting a letter from the Augusta National tournament.
Yeah, there's a way we behave here, Mr. Rahm, and it'll be one of those. All right, let's get out of here. We'll come back. We'll talk to Wilbon. I haven't seen Wilbon in a long time. So we're back with him. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Indochino ad, and it tells you to, you know, you have to have a personal endorsement. Well, I don't have any Indochino suits, but Nigel does.
That's right.
Please endorse.
I've got two suits, and the reason why I have them, one, they look fantastic, and two, they fit me better than any piece of clothing I've ever owned.
Yeah.
Makes me look great. It's very easy.
Don't get carried away. Makes you look good.
Makes me look fantastic. Yes. Yeah. And it's very easy to do. You go to a tailor, get the measurements. It'll be a custom tailored suit for you at a very reasonable
price.
You
had a very good experience with Indochino.
Yes, I did.
And you bought a second one as a result.
I loved it so much, I bought another one.
Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear company. It's been featured in major publications, including GQ, Forbes, and Fast Company. They make suits and shirts made to your exact measurements for a great fit. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and the option to personalize all the details, including your lapel, your lining, your monogramming. Here's how it works. You visit a showroom or you shop online at Indochino.com. You pick your fabric. You choose your customizations. You submit your measurements. You wait for your custom suit to arrive in just a few weeks. And this week, any listeners to this great high-quality podcast that's back on the air can get any premium Indochino suit for just $379 at Indochino.com. When you enter Tony K at checkout, that's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, the shipping is free. This is Indochino.com, I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O, Indochino.com. The promo code is Tony for any premium suit for just $379 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a suit that will fit you better than anything off the rack ever could.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Is the band Afraid of Figs, which we like. They write Professor Waffle House et al. After extensive correspondence with Nigel, we at Afraid of Figs Band have calculated it's about time to share another song with you. This one is called Riddlin' Barbie, about our first date our singer T once had and lived to sing about. Please enjoy and know that T, who is as maladroit as the good doctor in the ways of the internet, has a new podcast called Center Stage Show. We would love free publicity, as the show has very few listeners and you have so many. Please do read our name on the air, Afraid of Figs. They play in Michael Wilbon, who I haven't seen now in 10 days, which is unusual in our relationship, if it's not in the exact summer when I tend to leave a lot. So where have you been? What have you done?
By the way, I would say it's 17 days, at least.
Oh, well, I saw you through the magic of the screen on those other days when you were in Phoenix.
That's right. There were a few of those, yeah.
Yes.
Well, Tony, as you know, I started off spring break, Matthew's spring break in Scottsdale.
Right.
And so I was in Arizona for about, 8 or 9 days, and then went to Augusta, Georgia. Speaking of Waffle Houses, I went to a Waffle House my first night in Augusta.
Right.
And went to Augusta for the first time to the Masters. And then went back to Scottsdale because I'm trying to get my own golf game back together so you don't pummel me all summer.
Right.
And so
I stink. Don't worry about it. I play
too much. Taking lessons and playing a lot. And, I had dinner Saturday night, Tony, with... I think it was six people, but I'd say two of the three most famous people in Arizona.
Two of the three most famous in all of Arizona? So yes. I'll give you one is John McCain.
That's right. John McCain would be either one or two.
And Larry Fitzgerald.
And Larry Fitzgerald and?
Kurt Warner's not still there. He was famous
for... I'm sorry.
What?
I'm sorry. You went to Kurt Warner before Charles Barkley?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think of Charles as Arizonan.
He's been living here for 30 years.
I know, but I still think of him as Philadelphian.
No.
Okay.
Charles lives, his permanent residence is in Arizona, in Scottsdale.
Okay.
So dinner with them, among others. But that, it was cool. Roy Green, who I think is the single most underrated football player in my lifetime.
Because
so
he played both ways.
I was in high cotton, as they say.
So let's go back to the Augusta experience, because having never been there, all you could do was watch it on television.
Right.
When you saw it and you walked it, what struck you as something that people maybe don't realize?
Well, you don't realize any of it. I mean, television doesn't do it. It can't do it justice. It's two dimensions, and you're there. And, yeah, I mean, you know, it's the most stunning piece of land, arguably. You can't say a piece of land because there are things like Mount Rushmore and stuff like that. But I mean, in terms of recreation, what could be greater than this? I mean, than Augusta. It's just the rolling nature of the land, the beauty of it. It's awesome. It's overpowering. And I know it's in the context of being a golf course, but it's so much more than that. And you know, you're looking at holes you've looked at, in my case, I haven't watched golf my whole life like I've watched everything else, but it's been 23, 24 years. You're looking at greens, and you're like, I didn't know.
So
that,
green.
The drop-off on 16,
yeah,
you know, and so there's that reaction to every hole. It's so enormous, though. It's such a big piece of land. And the hills and the greenness.
See, this is
of
what
it,
people don't realize.
Of it.
People don't realize. They think it's flat. It is not flat.
No. And I tell you what else, Tony. I walked Wednesday's practice round, and Thursday I walked kind of for 2.5 hours on Thursday and sat for 2.5 hours. I wanted to sit in a spot and see people come through.
Right.
So, but somebody who I was with had a Fitbit and said we walked 7.5 miles one day and 5.5 another.
Yeah.
I just know this. On Friday, you know, on Saturday in Scottsdale, I walked out and attempted to tee it up. And I was so sore from walking that distance on those hills, on that particular land, that I couldn't believe that walking could do that to you. So imagine what's going on if you're playing.
Who did you see? I mean, and did anybody, when you saw them relatively close, certainly in a practice day you might have gotten relatively close, did anyone strike you as either taller or fatter or shorter or thinner? You know what I mean?
Sneaky tall.
Tony Finau is like, what, 6'6"?
He's a big boy. Yeah, Finau's big.
You know,
and a doctor. He put his own ankle back in.
Yeah.
That's the unbelievable thing. I was told yesterday, I did not know this. I don't know who told me this. He's Jabari Parker's cousin.
Oh, I had no idea.
On his mom's side.
Right. And
he's from Utah. He's much, you know, but that's the only one. I mean, Rory's jacked, but I think I knew that. You know, and everybody else I've seen, you know, I don't obviously don't cover much of anything anymore than the NBA, and I certainly don't go to as many golf tournaments as I used to years ago, but I still catch the tournament at Congressional or Olympia Fields if it's there or some other things. I've been in some pro-ams, and so I've seen the people that you think of, okay, we're going to watch a final round or something, who's on the leaderboard, Matt Kuchar, and I've seen them all. Rory is jacked. And Finau is tall. And other than that, I nobody surprised me. Finau and the ankle thing was unbelievable.
Because
I was sitting 20 feet away from Gordon Hayward on opening night in the NBA. And it took a team of people to put it back. And I know there are degrees of these sorts of dislocations. But my God, that was unbelievable. And I was not watching Finau, but it was the kind of thing, Tony, as you know, just the reaction, the sound at Augusta is one of those things that just sort of travels. And that was the kind of sound where you go, what was that? What happened there? And it takes a while, unless, you know, because you don't have your phone. There's no cell phones, which,
right,
by the
you're
way,
not allowed to
by
bring,
the way,
it's
is the greatest great. Thing. Let me, because, you know, you said, what did I notice? People have to be in the moment. You know, you go to a concert now, and everybody's got to watch, everybody, you know, under 50. They have to watch through their phones. As if they're glasses. They can't watch anything. You have to talk to people. You have to interact. You don't have your phone. There's no, and people can say, oh, yeah, I could get my phone in. No, you won't. They scan you. There's no phones.
No, there's
it's
no phones.
One of the great two-day periods of all time to have no phone, because we're old enough to remember not having a phone. Of course, you know, all dopes under 40 have to have a phone all the time, and they can't have it there. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to start practicing this more often. I'm going to go and leave my phone away. Just leave it somewhere. Not turn it off. Leave it. It's a wonderful thing. I love it. If I didn't love anything else about Augusta, and I loved all of that, the phone policy would make me love it unconditionally.
What did you eat on the course, and could you believe the prices?
Tony?
Tent. Private tent.
I had no prices. But I didn't eat the pimento.
Yeah.
Because
you went to the special place, the Bregman's place.
Did you go to
Bregman's place?
Bregman's, Wasserman. Yeah. I mean, I was a guest of Wasserman, and it was an unbelievable experience. And there was I didn't.
So you didn't get the pimento cheese sandwich?
No, I wouldn't do the pimento cheese.
$1.50
me.
$1.50. All right. Well, here's the critical question.
But the food, by the way, the food was a 10.
Yeah.
How about the fact that Bregman's is only open a week?
That's all it is.
A week.
Yeah, but it also costs. If you're not one of us that gets a nice pass, it costs like about $5,000 to get the pass. Yes, it's an enormously expensive. So here's the critical question, because this is how Augusta, for those people who don't remember this, and there's a lot of people listening who don't remember, there was a period of time for a couple of years when Augusta, when there was a woman named Burke. Martha Burke. And she was leading a crusade against Augusta because of alleged wrongdoings in their membership. And she went to all the sponsors and said, you know, you shouldn't sponsor. And Augusta went to its traditional sponsors and says, you know what? I don't worry about it this year. I don't worry about it next year. We'll take care of all this ourselves. And the way they do this is they sell so much Augusta gear on site. What did you buy? What did you walk away with? Because I think I'll give you my thoughts as to what the average person spends when they
go. I didn't go crazy, believe it or not.
Right.
I didn't buy any gifts. I mean, I know people were saying to me when they found out I was going, and I didn't tell many people I was going. Can you get? No.
Let me stop you right there.
Yeah,
I'm not doing that. Yeah. I got some stuff for me.
Yeah.
So I got a couple I like to wear. Look, when you come back here and it's snowing, you come back from Phoenix, from Scottsdale, and it's snow flurries in Washington.
Yeah.
I got winter gear in Augusta. I can probably, it looks like I can wear two more months here.
Yeah.
So I spent $650. I think it was like $654 or something like that.
I think that's like right around. I think that's in the average.
Yeah,
I think people spend a lot of money there.
Yeah. No. They do spend a lot. There's stuff that it's beautiful. I mean, it's, you know, this is not. this is not like going, I'm not going to mention any names of places I even go, and but you're not going there, and it's, you know, it's not like going to Dick's. I mean, it's just,
that's
you
right.
know, it's just unbelievable, the cash.
And it has in sports, one of the most recognizable logos in the world.
Yes,
everybody
yes,
knows
yes.
what it is.
And there's the authentic logo, Tony, you know, with the, it's a slightly different color. I won't go into that detail. But, yeah, it was, I have issues going to a lot of places that you wouldn't have issues going to. And, you know, Augusta National is one of them. And Martha Burke, who I admire Martha Burke, because Martha Burke was speaking for people like me. Or if not me, then people who look like me years ago. And people who look like her. And I have a classmate who's a member of Augusta National now, Jenny Rometty, because she's the president of IBM. Okay?
Yeah.
So she's one of, I don't know if they're just three women or not.
No, they don't. They nobody knows.
They don't make public.
No, they don't.
But you can know. You can know who. You know, you run into people if you play enough golf, or you're in a search, or you know, if somebody's a classmate.
Yeah, then you'll know.
You run into people who are members, and you know, an interesting thing happened to me going to Augusta for me, and I was being driven. I did a Mr. Tony, and I decided not to drive myself because I'd taken a red eye. I might have killed myself. So I'm half asleep through some of the drive, but I wake up in time to see an exit 154, and I'm thinking it's about 30 miles from Augusta, between Atlanta and Augusta, on 20. And 154 says Washington, Georgia. And that's where my father and my father's entire family grew up.
Oh.
It was also the setting, roughly, for The Color Purple, as I understand it. And my father fled there. He couldn't get the hell out of there fast enough because the notion of being lynched was very real. So Augusta can be romantic to some people. It ain't romantic to me and mine. And a lot of my relatives still live in Atlanta, and they did not flee. Not everybody fled. My parents fled the South, Tennessee and Georgia. My father, 30 miles from Augusta, Georgia. And so when I'm being driven there, and I see Washington, Georgia, if I'd been driving, I would have gotten off, and I would have driven around the town, a town where my father was the grandson of slave and slave owner, okay? So we're talking about the ferocity of the South, not pimento sandwiches.
Right.
I was past the point where I expected anything. I mean, it could have been more charming. And there are people of all colors that were there. I mean, it seemed like, you know, half the black people in Georgia were at Augusta. So I understand that 2018 is not, you know, 1944 when my father left. For fear of a noose. But that region of the country is not a place where I go and see it the same as everybody else. It doesn't mean Berkman's, you know, an Amen Corner only to me. And I loved seeing those things when I was there. Loved it. I just wanted to see it. And I'm glad I saw it, and it's a wonderful thing. And, you know, I hope to go. One of our friends who I just mentioned in this conversation, Tony, talked about getting a house next year and going. So I may do it. I may do it again. Who knows? It may
nice.
Become a regular thing.
You'll play it. You'll end up playing it. You'll play
no.
It.
I don't have those connections you have, but to be there.
I'll let you say that, but it's insane because my connections are exactly the same as yours. They're ESPN, and so you play the day after in the press lottery. So I mean that's how I do it. That's how you can do it. All right. I will physically see you later.
Yeah, I'm here until the NBA playoffs start Saturday.
All right, well, I'll see you for a few days anyway.
You know, I'll be here for a few days.
And then I'll go off to cover the playoffs, and I'll miss you.
And we'll see, we'll see where. We don't even know. I mean, it's Monday. We don't even know half the matchups. We don't even know half the first-round matchups.
You'll know them.
Here's all I know from what happened while I was gone. The Wizards just sink it up all the time. What the hell? Well, seriously, I found myself calling Neville from the West Coast. I'm not in tune with what time it is even now after all these years. I found myself calling Neville saying, did the Wizards just lose to Atlanta at home?
Yes.
I mean, are they the most disappointing team in the NBA this year?
Yeah, they're close.
I mean, they won 49 games last year, and they're going to be the 8 seed.
They're close.
So
it still seems like
they're in the conversation.
It seems like just yesterday I remember seeing Charles Barkley on TNT saying, "This is the team. Look out for this team." Was that was that 3 years ago, Wilbon, or 2 years ago?
Nobody feels
this,
that
this
now.
Has been one of
2 years ago.
Yeah, and this stretch.
We'll get this later in the week.
All right.
Later in the week. Goodbye. Right. I'll see you later.
All right. See you.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. By the way, this the mention of Neville always reminds me.
Love
this
Neville.
Is the most inside show.
Yeah.
Like, if you are listening for the first or second or fifth time, you go, what is Wilbon Neville?
Happened?
Who is Neville? Yeah, what is... Anyway, I can't be bothered with all that. We'll be back. We'll have news when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Casper ad, and Casper's ads now, these are over 2 pages.
Yeah.
Like, you got a Casper
listening. It's a segment. This is a Casper segment.
You've got to get it to one page. You can't
you
ask me to read over 2 pages.
This
page.
Is the Casper read.
It's right just balance. Too much. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest one night at a time. Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies. You spend a third of your life sleeping, you ought to be comfortable. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. I sort of like that. Casper offers 2 other mattresses, the Wave and the Essential. Wow, I didn't know that. The Wave features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body. The Essential has a streamlined design at a price that won't keep you up at night. Casper also offers a wide array. It's so hard to say wide array.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's like saying Russell Westbrook. It's very hard to say. Of other products like pillows and sheets to ensure an overall better sleep experience. This is fine. All of this is fine. They ask you to talk about convenience and selection. Then it says talking points are required.
Oh.
This is what the host must voice.
The host.
So here's, I'm the host.
What'd you just read for the last 45
exactly.
seconds?
Exactly.
I had options.
Optional.
Those were options. You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. And then host must address a minimum of 5 bullet points found in the chart above.
Really just knocking down the fourth wall
it's just
here,
telling
Tom.
It's telling you what to do. I have a Casper mattress for my dog.
That's right, Jesse.
My dog loves the Casper mattress.
Loves it.
My dog sleeps in 3 places every single night. She starts out in the bathroom on the tile. She comes out of the bathroom and the tile. She sleeps in her Casper mattress. At about 4 a.m, she jumps up on the bed. This is her routine, and she's a happy, and now I might say fat dog. She is a fat dog now.
Good enough for Tony's dog.
So I'm supposed
certainly
to,
good enough for you.
I'm contracted to include a personal experience, and I just did. I just did. Also, we'll close with this. You get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com/Tony and use Tony at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
If I was a ladybug, I'd fly around in June. If I was a werewolf, I'd hide from the moon. If I was a singer, I'd be humming this tune. And if I was your baby, I'd be seeing you soon.
Brandon McCoy sends this in. Been a loyal little since moving to the district in the summer 2004. This past winter, he started a folk duo called Alice and Isaac with his great friend Katie Klieger. They're performing shows in the Roundhouse Theater in Bethesda. They started playing music together in the breaks between shows, and shortly after, started to record original songs. The name for the band came from the characters we were playing in that show, he writes. We released our debut album, What Was I Thinking, on Bandcamp.com, a collection of 8 catchy, folky love songs. If this venture fails miserably, we still plan to release a second album entitled What Was I Thinking. Littles can stream and download the album at aliceandisaac.bandcamp.com. By the way, if it fails, come here and work at Chatter and do this, you know, on the side.
Sure. Looking for bartenders.
We need bartenders. Don't worry about it. The name of this song is Usain Bolt.
That's right, Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt is the name of this song.
I thought it'd be faster.
Rings a bell.
Yeah. What do you got for us? This is the news set.
This is the news, indeed, Mr. Tony. And we'll start off with the NBA, the association, as we like to call it here on the show. You heard Michael Wilbon say just a few moments ago, what is going on with the Wizards? They lost their fifth in a row, I believe. They lost to the Hawks the other night. They're now the eighth seed in the playoff bracket.
I'm not
Coach Brooks saying they're playing selfishly.
Yeah, I'm not going to take credit for what I'm going to say now because I read about this in the Washington Post, and it may have been Neil Greenberg or it may have been someone else. I don't know who it was. But somebody made a chart of how many times Scott Brooks and Bradley Beal have called the play of the Wizards unacceptable. It's like in the 20s. But it's not
this
unacceptable.
All this
it's not unacceptable.
Clearly quite acceptable.
Because he keeps putting the same people out there game after game after game. So it is acceptable to Scott Brooks that they stink because he never changes anything. He just doesn't change anything. I don't know if they're any good.
I went to the game on Friday night just because my son was invited to a party. They were behind the whole game. I mean, they were. It wasn't like
they play,
a late.
They play very well against the good teams. They do. I mean, I think
and have played well against Toronto, who they look likely to play.
How's Wall doing?
Didn't play. He's on one, off one.
Yeah,
right
now. He's not
so
playing
he didn't
the back
play.
To backs.
Okay.
Sato
okay.
played.
Okay.
So they don't look good. I would not be optimistic.
There's no, I don't want to say there's not the appropriate amount, but I will say I'm surprised there isn't more hand-wringing about this. Like, no one
cares.
People don't
no
care.
No one seems to care. But
no one cares.
Well, they won that big game six last year, remember?
the no time cares. John Wall hit that. Remember that time John Wall hit that shot?
Yeah.
That's what his career is looking like that time. But this is, history will not remember this several year stretch kindly. I mean, they are wasting the opportunity. I don't know if there's a real opportunity as long as LeBron James is in your conference, but they're not an eighth place team. They're just not.
We need to get Paul Pierce back.
What else you got?
On the other side of the tracks, the 76ers don't seem to know how to lose.
No, they win all the
time. They're pretty good.
They beat the Mavericks to win the 14th win in a row, tying the club.
Can they be that good?
Yeah.
Can they suddenly be
that's
that good?
That's without Embiid. Embiid's not playing because he broke a bone in his face. He's been out.
Yeah, an orbital bone. Yeah,
Markel Fultz doesn't play.
He plays
a little bit now.
Doesn't start. I mean, Ben Simmons has just been Ben Simmons' line when they beat the Cavs. Now LeBron's line, I think this was Friday night. LeBron's line is ridiculous. It's like 44, 14, and 11.
Was that the 132-130
game? Yes, 132-130. Ben Simmons has like 30, 15 assists, 13 rebounds. I mean, he has
his numbers are impressive.
I mean, and he cannot shoot the ball from outside of 10 feet.
Is that right?
Yes. I shouldn't say he can't. He refuses to shoot the ball, basically, from outside of 10 feet. So if he can ever learn to shoot, and he's like 19, I mean, I think he's one of the 10 best players in the league right now. He's carrying them.
And they're the fourth seed, I believe, right now.
That's hard to believe, isn't it? I mean, they've been so terrible
they're
for
the
so
third
long.
Seed right
now. Third seed, yes.
Cleveland is four.
Yeah.
I mean, if Embiid comes back full, I mean, Embiid is, again, he's a top 10 player. I mean, they're good. Legit good.
And as well as the Celtics have played this year in terms of a possible opponent.
They're hurt.
With Kyrie Irving out.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
going to be tough.
So I may be spreading misinformation here, but my kid was telling me Ben Simmons for Rookie of the Year. And I said, no, Ben Simmons is not a rookie. And he said, he qualifies.
Yep. He sat out the whole year. He qualifies.
I don't understand how that works.
Yep. He qualifies.
And before I get to the rest of the news, I actually forgot this.
Did you know,
I went on a trip. I went to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Presents for everyone. We'll start off with baby boy Bootsy.
Come on. Wow.
Baby bear.
Oh, an Alcatraz.
From Alcatraz.
Bear. That is
Wow. Back from San Fran.
Aim to be in prison.
And for you, Michael, I've got some sort of ancho chicken rub.
Some sort of rub.
Oh, it's called
the cream or the clear?
Sort of rub.
Yeah. I asked for money. Give me money.
It's Gary, right?
Yes, sir.
I've got some fog chaser coffee.
Oh, thank you very much.
For Saliza.
San Francisco.
What's sure to get you? So I got you.
Floating pen?
Cocoa nib chocolate shortbread.
Because you think I'm fat. That's fine. That's great.
You know who's fat? My dog is fat.
Yeah.
My dog now weighs about 85 pounds.
Whose fault is that?
My dog doesn't run. I was away and it doesn't. Oh, sourdough bread.
Sourdough bread. That's right.
Thank you.
In the plastic bag.
Yeah, I don't.
Bagged sourdough bread.
Well, it's
wrapped in paper.
I got it like last Tuesday.
Yeah, this
should be
pretty
fine.
Old. This
right. Who wants
I'm
it?
Eating a nib right
Step
now.
Up
I got it on Saturday morning
Fruit
before
slices.
I flew back.
Nice job out of you.
So there you go.
Thank you, Nige.
Happy everybody.
That's so kind.
And I would also like to say a personal word of thanks to, they were quite good?
Mm-hmm.
To the people at my gym, Washington Sports Club, and Wells Fargo for helping me after I was robbed.
You were robbed,
I was robbed at my gym.
How's Ms. Wu?
Ms. Wu is doing great. She'll actually be here at the end of next week.
Fantastic.
Say hi.
Excited.
to see an Oakland A's game. Got to see Ricky Henderson, which was quite a thrill.
Very cool.
So, yeah, a lot of fun out there.
Ricky Henderson?
Yeah, yes. Ricky Henderson was out. He was on the field. He was catching the first ceremonial
pitch.
He's
not playing with
him. No, he wasn't playing.
But, I mean, coaching. He's not coaching with
No. Okay. But it's still Ricky. Good. Great. And speaking of baseball, what's going on with the Nats? They lost their fifth game in a row, got swept by the Mets after losing in 12 innings last night, 6-5.
I'll tell you who's not hitting. Michael A. Taylor and Ryan Zimmerman, they're not hitting at all.
No, Zimmerman's hit like 110.
You know.
Trey Turner appears to be scuffling a bit as well, right?
What are your thoughts on Taylor's little mustache?
I don't even know it. I mean, I haven't even seen it. I haven't paid
attention. See it with the
the muffler,
the head coverings he and Bryce were wearing.
Can I just say this? Shohei Ohtani.
Holy moly. Yeah.
Now, I think you know that I've said this many times, how much I admire Keith Olbermann. And Keith Olbermann has made the work of his life in terms of sports is baseball. Much like Bob Costas. They know a lot about a lot of things, but baseball is what they love. Baseball is what they study. Tom Boswell is this way. Keith was so convinced that Ohtani could not play on this level, on the Major League Baseball level. And no matter what I would
say. On either side?
On either side. And no matter what I would say to him about it takes a lot of time. You don't speak the language. You don't know the people. You haven't been in the ballparks. He says, no, he can't do it. Shohei Ohtani last night went 7 innings. Gave up one hit, no runs, and 12 strikeouts.
Had a perfect game in the seventh.
He's 2-0 now. He's 2-0 in major leagues, not in spring training, where admittedly he wasn't any good.
Right.
In the actual show, he's 2-0.
Up here.
Yeah, up here, as Coach Joe would like to say. Mike Socha compared him to Doc Gooden when Doc Gooden was great. Okay?
Doc Gooden ever have three dingers in a week?
He's hitting. He's got 3 home runs. In the games where he's not pitching, he has 3 home runs.
Did you see Tony?
So is it possible he's actually great, that he is Babe Ruth? Is it possible?
He certainly has been as promised, which rarely happens. I mean, he
has
been outstanding.
In spring training, he did look terrible.
Yeah.
He did. And by the way, he's touching 100. He's got 2 pitches.
Yeah.
If you go 100 on a fastball and you have a splitter that drops, you don't need any other pitches. That's all you need. Because you cannot prepare. It's, you know.
Did you by chance see his first home run?
Nope.
Bench,
I was in a train.
The bench gave him the cold shoulder treatment. I'll show you the video.
Did he understand that?
He comes back to the dugout.
No, he was trying to high-five
and he's
people,
looking around.
Oh, he's
like,
not American. He doesn't know
that. Well, and then they came back and got him. It's a cute moment.
Yeah, it's very
worth
nice.
Worth Googling up.
By the way, on the other side of it, Giancarlo Stanton, not exactly off to a great start.
They're booing him.
Yeah, they did
boo
him.
Setting records. Setting records.
Strikeout records.
3-for-28 with 16 strikeouts in his first 6 games with the Yankees.
Struck out 5 times.
Had 2 home runs the first night.
Yeah, everybody loved him.
You should not boo this early.
And on April 9th, actually it was on April 8th, he became the first major leaguer to ever strike out 5 times without a hit in 2 two games in a season.
Yeah.
I guess the pitchers are ahead of him in the American
League. 7.
Yes. Yeah. He's done.
I'm
kidding. Everyone wants to, rush to bury him. And it's like, it's still, very early in the season. Laura Ingraham will return to her TV show tonight after a week off. Not people were sure whether it was a real vacation.
I was off for a week.
Yeah.
Nobody's writing about that.
No, this comes after she got into a Twitter spat with David Hogg, the 17-year-old who was at Parkland School, and I guess he's a senior and was rejected from a couple of colleges. And on March 28th, Ingraham tweeted out, David Hogg rejected by 4 colleges to which he applied and whines about it. Dinged by UCLA with a 4.1 GPA. Totally predictable given acceptance rates. And later on, Hogg tweeted a list of advertisers on Ingram's show urging followers to contact them. And very shortly thereafter, 18 companies pulled ads off of her show.
Have they kept the ads off? Will she have advertising tonight?
She'll have advertising. Those people, I think, will. I mean, many of them pulled it off in the week right before she left. So theoretically, they would still hold on that.
But yes.
Fox has put out a statement that says, we're not going to bow to, we're not going to let this dictate what we do. So.
And by the way, they should not. They should not. They hired her. Right. And warts and all. Everybody, look, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity. These are not surprising people. The lane they run in is very well marked. And if you hire them and you don't back off them for that.
No.
No, you don't back off them for that. Well, I mean, I might feel it's ridiculous to go after a kid. You shouldn't go after a kid.
Especially one of those kids in the current climate. Yeah, but it's hardly the meanest thing she's ever said about anyone.
So, yeah. So, no. She's fine with that. And that's who she is.
And meanwhile, Sean Hannity has been going at it with...
What is this with Jimmy Kimmel?
With Jimmy Kimmel. All right, so, well, Chris, do you want to...
What was that? What did you just say?
It started was that audible? I'm sorry.
It started out last week. Kimmel played a clip of First Lady Melania Trump reading a book to the kids during the Easter egg roll at the White House.
Yeah.
And then he was mimicking her accent because she said something like, and this and that. And he said, oh, and this and that. And he points to somebody in his staff who doesn't, you know, a Mexican-American, says, look, you could be the first lady someday. And then Hannity just lashed out him, said, liberal Jimmy Kimmel making fun of the first lady of the United States and her involvement at the White House Easter egg roll. Even her accent. Now I'm going to tell you something. What a disgrace, Mr. Kimmel. That's a fifth language. How many do you speak? So then he went back and, you know, and this is on the
very
show.
Very publicly on their show.
Five languages she speaks. Good for her.
Yeah.
I'm fairly fluent in one.
fairly. And then
is Kimmel.
It went on to Twitter.
Love Kimmel.
And,
and Hannity did on Friday night, because I was watching Hannity on Friday night, so... Assess where my life's at. he did 20 minutes in the open, a 20-minute open on Kimmel, where he basically called him a pervert. Not basically, he called him a pervert because they went back and
Harvey Weinstein Jr. did some man show excerpts, took a ton of the old man show stuff.
And yeah. And then Kimmel apologized.
Yeah, Kimmel said, look, and you know, let's back off this. And our back and forth is not helping the national dialogue in any kind of way. So let's just, you know, bygones. And then
I really like Kimmel.
And yeah.
By the way, have I ever told you this? I'm told by one of our cameramen at PTI, who also does camera work for Sean Hannity, that Hannity's a big PTI fan.
Really?
Yeah, I'm told. I don't know.
Hannityization.
Well, Hannity said that he saw the you know, come across his crawl on his phone that said, you know, Kimmel has apologized. It says, you know, trying to bury the hatchet. And Hannity, of course, said, I will address this fully on my show. 9 a.m.
You know what? Give
Eastern.
Him credit. He's not dumb about that.
No, he's not.
And tune in tonight.
Yes. And a couple of things that happened in the week that we were gone. One, melancholy at me trails to Stephen Bochco. We, of course, know him and love him as the creator of...
of what I consider to be the greatest television show ever made on broadcast television, not on cable, because language, there's different rules. Hill Street Blues, to me, is the greatest show ever made. It's just
fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
Also went on to develop L.A. Law. I mean, just had a hugely successful
career.
Yeah,
he's great.
10 Emmys, I think, over the course of 4 PBD Awards. So we will miss him. And Robert Griffin III is back, baby. That's right. He signs a one-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens to back up Joe Flacco.
Wow.
They're different types of quarterbacks. Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, is Joe Flacco
Ozzie
elite?
Newsom said he impressed in his workout.
Yeah, said obviously his personality. He's a confident guy. He's a very talented quarterback. He's had a lot of success in this league early on. We're excited about it. We felt like we needed a number two quarterback.
We'll be ready for day one.
You left out the last sentence where he said, "And he's not Colin Kaepernick." So.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Are we not doing a WrestleMania segment?
That's going to be in the second hour.
What is that?
WrestleMania, the big WWE event.
Ronda Rousey's debut.
Ronda Rousey.
When is
she
that?
Wrestled?
It was last night.
How was it?
She won.
Of course she won. That's
Kurt
fixed.
Angle.
Is that fixed?
I believe it is.
No.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait,
was
what?
It broken?
Wait, professional. I need a minute. She and Kurt Angle beat Triple H, Paul Levesque, and Stephanie McMahon, the daughter of the small business administrator. So there was a lot, you know. I'll give you a full update off there. It was terrific. Let's just leave it at that. Leave it at that. Daniel Bryan returned. Whole lot going on.
And the Americans is back. I was taking it you did not watch it last week.
I did not.
Well, he's already seen it.
Last season. I only saw the first episode.
Yeah.
So the first episode. All right. So, wow, I'm just looking at a map where it says the week ahead, like next week, there's snow here on Monday.
Yeah, it'd be great.
That's like April 39th, and there's snow here next Monday. That's crazy. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the Old Guy Radio with Steve Sands.
That's right.
We'll catch Steve Sands, who we almost saw in Augusta, but we did not.
Sandsy.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
is Old Guy Radio for the day, and anytime you can play the Beach Boys, it's a good day. This is California Girls. Why are we playing this?
Because this is on this date in 1965, Bruce Johnston officially joined the group, I guess,
okay,
replacing Brian Wilson as a vocalist, right?
Yes.
And bassist?
Well, yes. Bassist? I mean, he didn't do lead vocals that Brian Wilson used to do. But Brian Wilson, he just stopped touring. He was deaf,
yeah,
and he didn't know what he was doing.
And we're playing this song.
So this is what, 53 years ago?
Yeah, and this was the first song that he was actually on, was California
But
Girls.
Mike Love is singing the lead.
Well, Mike Love, yeah. And Mike, yeah, Love says, you know, it's always, you know, in the afterwards, who actually wrote more of this song, him or Brian Wilson? He's like, I wrote everything except for I Wish They Could All Be California Girls. And the origins of the song...
Can I just say that the signature line in the song is, I wish they all could be, yeah, California girls.
It's the good one. And right, apparently this was written after Brian Wilson took acid. And this was sort of his expressing his love.
For the first time or the, yeah, 4 millionth
time? Nothing good was written,
I think,
before.
One of the first times,
Brian Wilson,
yeah,
was under psychiatrist care for many, 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 yes, years.
What's the name of that, the movie that came out not that long ago about
Hope
him?
Hope and something, I don't know.
But you liked it very much.
Oh, yeah. I did. Eugene Landy was the, yes, famous shrink. So, okay, Steve Sands joins us now. Michael and I missed him on Monday when we went to Augusta. We missed him physically. I got a few people when we were walking around who listened to the show, who said hello. Augusta is a place where you don't expect to hear La Cheeserie or anything like that. Did you get any show recognition while you were there?
In a hushed tone,
yeah,
the Augusta La Cheeserie, as opposed to the screaming and yelling La Cheeserie everywhere else,
right,
in the world of golf. But yeah, we got a few. I got a couple every day, probably walking around from when we walk up to the tree and back and walk through all those people. Yeah, I probably got at least one or two every day, but not in the normal,
right,
volume that you would have on the regular tour.
Which I understand, because people are afraid they'll be tossed.
Were there any remove reports, you? Sands, were there any reports? Late last week, this list of banned phrases came out. Like, you couldn't yell Baba Booey and You the Man. And
mashed potatoes.
Sweep the leg, Johnny, whatever was on there. Were there any reports
dilly, of
people
dilly
being bounced for yelling any of that stuff?
We do not know if anybody was thrown out because of that, but I'm telling you, people there, it doesn't matter where you come from or what kind of sports fan you are, when you step onto the grounds at Augusta National, you just act differently. People just do. You don't run if you're in a hurry. You don't do things that you normally would do anywhere else. And I do not know if anybody was thrown out for yelling anything, but we didn't hear anybody yell anything, so I doubt it. I did run into Eric Weddle, the safety for the Rams.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Saw him last night. And he's a very good friend of Charlie Hoffman's.
Okay, who got a hole in one.
Exactly, at 16 yesterday. So Eric was telling the story of he was out there rooting for Charlie Hoffman, and he yelled, "Let's go, Charlie," real loud. And a cop came over, or a security officer came over, and told him, not only can you not do that, but you can be removed for yelling that. He goes, no, I was rooting for the player. He goes, no, you were heckling him. He goes, no, I wasn't heckling anybody. I was yelling, "Let's go, Charlie." So Charlie had to come all the way over from the tournament practice area, the range, all the way to the ropes to tell the security guy, no, he's a buddy of mine. He's with me. He's Eric Weddle, the safety of the Ravens. And it's just a weird kind of vibe there if you're trying to do anything out of the norm. And Eric Weddle found out the hard way yesterday.
Sands, is it true? It's Chris. Is it true that they have like plain clothes folks kind of in the crowd?
Narcs.
So if you yell like that, you can't know who. If I yell "Rip Harambe," just for example,
R.I.P.
Yeah. There are people there, like, kind of dressed as regular fans who can throw you out, because I find that totally awesome. If so.
It's correct.
Yes.
Wow.
It's amazing.
They have people all over the ground.
So good.
Doing all kinds of things. It's amazing. I'm telling you, if you guys remember the movie The Firm,
that's what Augusta National
Golf Club is. That's what Augusta National is. It's The Firm. You don't really know exactly what takes place there. You'd love to know. You ask. You get a very vague question. and you walk away with a smile on your face and say, yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
So let me say, I'm looking at this list. I love Martha Burke, Jimmy Carter eats peanuts, and my favorite, hey, security, can you pick me out of this sea of people? All on the list of things you cannot yell.
So this leads to, I think, a realistic question. Michael and I were watching this yesterday. John Rahm looks like a club thrower. John Rahm was I felt, over the top. Does John Rahm get to be reminded from the people at Augusta, we wish you well in your career, son, but that's not how we do it here?
Yeah, they'll do it subtly, behind the scenes. They'll probably explain to him that they prefer a different type of decorum. I'll tell you what, how about the chimp? I don't know if you saw this, guys, but Michael had to be watching 24/7. He's a golf nut. On the 12th tee on Saturday, the eventual champion, Patrick Reed, let out a four-letter word that was live on television that I am quite certain will be addressed.
Bite?
Whether it was addressed last night at the champion's dinner or whether it'll be addressed at some point. No, it was not bite.
Yeah.
It was pretty strongly worded, and I would imagine that he will be reminded that that's not how we like our champions to act.
So let me get to the tournament itself and the drama of just the first three holes with Rory McIlroy and Patrick Reed. I said earlier in the show that the most significant single shot in the tournament, in my opinion, was McIlroy missing the eagle on number two. It may have been Reed stuffing a putt on number three that was going to go 15 feet past if it doesn't go in. I wonder, and then Reed settling down after that and winning the tournament because he played well after that. What did you think of the opening drama, including Rory's tee shot, which, my God, was so far right, it was unbelievable.
Tony, I stood there to the right of the first tee yesterday because I wanted to feel the vibe. Knowing these guys as well as we know them professionally, I wanted to feel the vibe of what it's like on the first tee at Augusta in the final round of the Masters. There is so little oxygen in that area in that moment that I can't believe they get the club back, let alone actually hit the club face. Who knows where the golf ball is going to go? How anybody finds the fairway on the first tee at Augusta in the final round of the Masters when you're in the final group is beyond me. Reed hit it way left. He ended up making a bogey.
Yep.
Rory got away with it, even though he hit it way right. He got lucky. And that's when I thought, that's when Rory's going to win. He's gotten those breaks all week. He spit one out from the trees on one on Saturday. He spit one out from the trees on 18 on Saturday and made a birdie eventually at the 54th hole. So when he, you know, busted his drive on two after making that four at the first after that really horrible tee shot, and then hit that incredible second shot.
Yes.
You make that eagle putt, Tony, and you are dictating the situation. You are absolutely in control of the day. And he wiggled that one away, and he just kind of shoved it, didn't have a great smooth putting stroke like he had the first 3 days and like he had on the last nine at Bay Hill in his last start before the match play. I don't know. I think that eagle putt drops at two, and that changes the whole dynamic of the early portion of the day. And then, as you said, at the third hole, when Reed's, you know, birdie putt drops in as opposed to going 15 feet past, he's going to bogey that hole. McIlroy's going to have a one- or two-shot lead going to the fourth, and I think McIlroy rolls. But, you know, that one stroke of the pen at two with that eagle putt that missed really, really shook up McIlroy, in my opinion, and he was done from there.
He was done, and I wondered about this. I mean, when you're watching on television, they cut from hole to hole to hole. So you watch on television, you see what Jordan Spieth is doing. But if I'm Patrick Reed, I don't live in fear of Jordan Spieth because he was so far behind, and he's not going to catch and pass him. He caught him once, but Reed still had a par five in front of him. And Reed, with the birdies on 12 and 14, that's where he probably won it, don't you think?
100%. Jordan just ran out of holes. I mean,
yeah.
I know he bogeyed the last, but forget that. But he was so far back, he was nine shots back to begin the day, that he would have needed something, you know, ridiculous. He had an extraordinary round, but it wasn't a ridiculous crazy around. And he needed a lot of help from the top. He didn't get it from Patrick. He got it from Rory. He got exactly what he needed from one of the two players. But when Patrick just kind of settled in after that third hole and hovered around 14, 15 under par the entire time, in the middle portion of the back nine, that's when Patrick Reed won. He had a Fred Couples at the 12th hole in 1992-like moment at 13 when the ball stuck in the hill every other time.
Yes.
If it hadn't rained the night before, it rained during the day on Saturday, but most people didn't realize that it rained a bunch for about an hour and a half on Saturday night, the middle of the night. It really dampened things. I'm the greens because they have the sub-air systems, but in the rough and in the grass away from the greens. And that ball that he hit with his second shot on 13 goes in the water. That changes things a lot. But he had his Fred Couples-like moment, if you remember that ball staying dry.
I do.
12th hole in 92. That's what happened with Patrick. He ended up making a par there, got away with it, and then he made a beautiful birdie at 14, which is not an easy second shot. And that pretty much was it. And, yeah, he settled in nicely, and he played awfully well. So I know he's not the winner that everybody wanted. Everybody wanted a career Grand Slam with Rory. They wanted Ricky to win his first. They wanted Jordan to win another one. And they got the lovable villain, who is Patrick Reed. But he played awfully well. You have to give him credit.
He
won the Masters.
He won it.
Nobody lost it.
No, he won it. So let me get to a few overall questions. And one is about Tiger Woods, who closed with a 68 and was never in contention, but closed with a 68 in a real live major, you know, with real live pressure. Now, there's not that much pressure when you're like the fourth group out on Sunday because you're so far out of it. But he finished 68. What is your overall assessment of what this tournament means to Tiger Woods' comeback, if anything?
Nothing. It doesn't mean anything to me. I think it would have meant something if he would have put himself in contention on Saturday or Sunday, even one of the 2 days, not just Sunday.
Right.
To see how he reacts with the adrenaline flowing, being back in contention, being back late in the day, knowing what's at stake. To me, you know, no offense to any player. I mean, look, you know, we would all love to tee it up at the Masters because that means we're a PGA Tour player, one of the best players in the world. There was no pressure on him yesterday at all, just like you alluded to, Tony. It didn't mean anything. A 68, when nobody cares, means nothing. To me, I still think that he needs to play courses where he would – I think he should play this week at Hilton. He'll be hitting driver and stingers off the first tee, off all the tees. He won't have to hit driver. He'll get himself into contention by playing the way he knows how to play and smartly making his way around the golf course. To me, if he doesn't get the driver in gear, he's going to go take a few weeks off, Tony. He's going to play Quail Hollow, where the PGA was last year.
Yes.
That's the Wells Fargo Championship. You've got to drive the ball well there. He's going to go to the Players' Championship. You've got to drive the ball well there. None of this matters until he gets himself in contention again in a big, big spot.
Okay.
And I think he didn't do that this past week.
See, I couldn't help but think, with what happened by the end of Saturday's round, when Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods were out of it. And then I looked at that leaderboard yesterday with all those guys in their 20s, and I just thought the torch had been passed because Augusta is a place where both Phil and Tiger have and can win. And I thought this was like golf's way of saying the thanks a lot, but it's over.
Tony, these guys are so good. Patrick Reed is 27. McIlroy is 29. Thomas and Spieth and Fowler, all in their 20s. These guys can really play. Tiger Woods played pretty well, you know, for the 4 days. He made the cut, which was a goal, and then he shot 68 yesterday with no pressure. He finished 16 shots back of the lead. That's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a big distance between where he is right now and where those guys are. Look at that leaderboard. Tiger is going up against guys who can really, really play. And as we've said in the past, he opened that door for them to have the confidence that they have in big moments. Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, all these guys wouldn't be winning major championships, wouldn't even be close to Tiger Woods if Tiger would have been healthy all these years and continuing to play at a high level, which you know he would have if he wouldn't have gotten in all that mess, you know, with his health and also off the golf course.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Sorry to miss you guys on Monday. Hope you had a good time.
Had a very good time. Steve Sands, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We'll come back with a jingle and with some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony's a Wall of Famer. It's more impressive than even being a Hall of Famer. Tony's a doctor of letters. It's slightly less impressive than a zookeeper or a lion tamer, wouldn't you say? He's a two-time Emmy winner, but that's slightly less impressive than paying the socialite's check at dinner. An ESPN A-lister is slightly more impressive than never winning that damn Pulitzer.
That's Joe Arrow. That's beautiful. Wonderful. It's that's well the done. Billy Joel song. Yeah. She's got a way about her. Mm-hmm. Well that's just, that's terrific. That really is terrific. Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank, why are we thanking Chris and Gary? Why are we lately thanking the people who sit in?
Long overdue.
This is a change in the philosophy.
You let Gary and I write the copy. That's what you're going
to
get.
I just want to recognize
did you
the
get,
by
now
the
that way, we're doing it
did
gratis,
you get that
least you could do.
Soccer jersey? Did you get the soccer jersey? Is there something? What is that Nespresso bag? What's in that?
The soccer jersey.
Yeah. That's the soccer jersey.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that beautiful? That might
fit your cat.
I already have the Senegal soccer jersey.
Yeah, it's a Senegal soccer jersey.
It's a duplicate, but I'll keep it. It's good.
It's cool.
It's away.
There's other stuff in here.
This is stuff for you. Yeah, this is specifically for you.
There's a Henry Adams, History of the United States, 1801, 1809.
This is specifically for you. Why do you think it was sitting where you sit?
I don't know. Look at this. Look what card's on top of the Nats pack.
Papelbon.
Yeah. Nats legend Papelbon. Jonathan Papelbon. Do you want me to? Go ahead. I'll look at the card here.
Nats bullpen.
Oh, yeah. There's also this, Chris.
Yeah, your Malibu beer you still have not
No,
taken.
This is
Hi,
from,
Chris. Yeah. A little thanks for the laughs. You're welcome. I love Mondays and Thursdays when you're on. Who doesn't? I leave you a serious gift of history and a spoiling one from Senegal in the World Cup. Best, call me Ishmael.
Isn't that great?
Nice.
That's great.
So we thank Chris and Gary.
Really disguise my own hand well in that.
We thank Wilbon and Sands for being on the show. For calling in. They don't call in. We call them.
Well, you know.
Yeah. What are you doing? I'd also like to thank sponsors Casper Mattresses and Indochino. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. This is very odd to thank the people who sit here.
You're welcome, Tony.
Only thing.
Anytime, Tony. For you, anything.
Did I mention?
I guess we'll stop doing that. As of today.
So this was very important to Finn that we mentioned that Pineapple Landscaping is the official landscaper of the Tony Kornheiser
Show. Right. Fantastic.
How did he do your house?
Great job
on your house.
Front yard.
Yeah,
in
that's
backyard.
Wonderful. So from Scott Beckett, literally sitting at the pool at the Phoenician. Yes, a two-bathrobe, two-bath experience, listening to the podcast. Been a loyal listener since the podcast days, and I keep turning up the volume to confront the leaf blower. Can't believe the leaf blower got another gig. Can't wait until spring cleaning starts on Thursday morning outside of Chatter.
So you saw the leaf blower work to help unveil the banner for the Astros, right?
I did see that.
Yeah, that was cool. Nice to see him get another gig.
From Craig Copeland, Hoff Waff, he claims, in Owings Mills, in the last decade, my brothers and I have all been inducted into our high school sports hall of fame. For each inductee, the school paints his or her name on the walls of the basketball gym. Figured you could answer this one. Can we sign Hoff Waff after our names, or would it be a misrepresentation to do so? Please don't read my name on the air, as this email is incredibly self-serving and self-aggrandizing, which is how we live around here.
I think you should go for it.
If you're in the Hall of Fame, and you're also, and that Hall of Fame
has a wall of fame,
then I think you're a Hoff Waff.
Yes.
Hoff Waff.
You know, but I think it'd be better. I think that if... The hardest thing to get is the WAF.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
So I think if you get into another Hall of Fame, then you're totally covered.
Yes.
Yeah.
More multiple hoffs, only one waff.
That's a two-hoff waff.
From
situation.
Benjamin Brunner, a radio sports guy in Eastern Shore, Maryland, who writes, "Dear Dr. Hoff-Waff, all in for week one, hun." That must be a reference to RG3.
No question.
That has to be an RG3 reference. From David Walsman, who signs of Walsman Automotive Marketing. Yeah, of course. "Professor Hoff-Waff, I heard you were at the Masters. Professor. Can you pick up a belt buckle for me? It's for my brother. I'll pick it up at Chatter." No. I mean, I did it already. But we got... Michael, tell what you got.
I have a new... Bootsy outfit. I have a Masters onesie that is a tradition unlike any other. The new pavilion, the shopping pavilion, is the single worst place on earth. It almost ruins the experience. People are shoving to just get gear, you know, keychains.
You bought a keychain.
And you were there Monday.
Yes.
Imagine what it's like.
Yes. You have to go through a line that's thousands of feet back and forth. It's like you're at a
Disney World. Is there not a famous people line? I don't...
Yeah, where's the 311?
You're going to get the normal all over you.
From Travis Brenton in Boise, Idaho. "She called her manager. I said promo code HOFFWAFF. He called security. They proceeded to toss me out of the building. I was now screaming at the top of my lungs, promo code HOFFWAFF, promo code HOFFWAFF. Once I landed on the hard sidewalk and bruised my hip, I started yelling, representative, representative, representative. That made it worse. The security guard kicked me in the stomach as I picked myself up and I was trying to leave. Before the cops showed one more, I tried one more phrase, Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi. At this point, I just ran to my rental and headed to the airport. Now I'm pretty sure I'm no longer welcome at Globe Life Field anymore. Looks like I need to stick with ordering off the website. I wonder what would have happened had I tried Bootsy." If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Don't talk back to me, all right?
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like a fire that soon will fizzle. Had a brainstorm once, much like a drizzle. God, look at you, you truly glisten. Talk a bit louder and I'll pretend to listen. So sweet, you're giving us a big old cavity. Off your feet again, defying gravity.
From the moon. If I was a singer, I'd be humming this tune. And if I was your baby, I'd be seeing you soon. If I was an astronaut, I'd float around in space. If I played baseball, I'd steal every base. If I was Usain Bolt, I'd win every race. And if I was your honey, I'd be kissing your face. Fisherman, I'd bring extra bait. If I was a fortune teller, I'd tell you our fate. That's if I was yours, darling, our life would be great. Yes, if I was yours, darling, our life would be great. This was true, my love, I'll lay the rest out here. We'd argue over dishes, go camping twice a year. You make coffee in the morning, it's just nice to have you near. I love you till the end of time, of this have no fear. I love you till the stars don't shine, to me this is clear. I love you and we'll be just fine. Now pass me another beer.